Please be advised, there are occasional cuss words in these episodes, so now you know.
All right, so I'm happy just shooting the shit, but you said you had an idea. So.
Yes, but it's a very small idea, and so okay. I'd rather it sort of work its way into our conversation more organically.
Oh, okay. All right, so I'm getting the sense that you're not going to reveal it.
No, I'll reveal when the time is right. It's okay. More of a, like, yeah. This could be a segment on the show, okay. But it's, like, a very small...
You never know, though.
Blink and you miss it.
Like, one thing connects to another, and suddenly the small thing, it's like we realize, along with our gazillion listeners, mm-hmm. that... it actually was like a real big thing.
Mm-hmm. Episode 4, What Am I Supposed to Do in This Situation? In this episode, your hosts, Steve and Maul, hurtle from point A to point B while exploring the human capacity for cluelessness and, occasionally, perfection. Strap in for The Ride to Redacted.
I think that we should develop a sign-on.
A sign-on? Okay.
The Twilight Zone.
Up ahead, a signpost. Your next stop, point B.
Yeah. Redacted.
Redacted.
I don't know where I'm going anyway, so I don't think taking away the street names would be detrimental. I just navigate by vibes.
You know when you're there.
Yeah. When you're here, you're there. And when you're there, you're family.
Would that be a sign-on?
No.
You're trying
to... I think
that
we might get sued. Because when you're here, your family is like something. It's like Wendy's or something. I don't know.
I was thinking...
Trying look to at the sky.
When I was taking my little nap before this drive, or lie
during
down.
During this drive.
Right. There was a phrase that occurred to me. I was like vaguely remembering it, and then I was like, I think that was in the fine film Zero Effect, mm-hmm. where Daryl Zero, as you'll recall, says, talks about how a word about finding things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, a word about finding things. If you're looking for something, your odds of finding it are very low, because out of all of the things in the world, you're only looking for one of them. But if you're looking for anything, then your odds of finding it are very high, because out of all of the things in the world, you're bound to find something. Yeah. One of my all-time favorite movies.
I mean, that could be our a little bit of a mantra here.
Yeah. One of my all-time favorite movies, and the reason that I named my alter ego character Daryl.
Oh, I did not know that. So, like, another thing about traveling and trying to find our way, or even trying to find our way content-wise for the episode, in order to get from point A to point B when you don't really know where you're going or how to get there, one way to do it would be to just keep going and continually assess, are you there yet? And you'll constantly get feedback saying, not there, not there, not there. And then when you're there, you'll get a feedback that says, I'm there.
That sounds like kind of spiritually related to that digital coin flipper that your friend invented in... for the science fair, like in high school or whatever,
right.
Where it just basically came back as a 1 or a 0 and you pressed a button
right.
at random. There's two possible outputs, 1 or 0. You know that the place you started is already a 0. It is not the place you're going. Everywhere else is probably going to be a 0 except for one place, which is going to be a 1.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a very primitive navigator. It's It's not super efficient, but it could be very accurate.
It's the metal detector's guide to traveling.
Right.
I was thinking, I've been making a lot of playlists on Spotify, and they all have, like, silly names. And so I handed the phone to Phoenix, my partner, after finishing the playlist. I was like, oh, take a look at it. Because as I was going, I was, like, singing some of the songs, and they were, like, staring at me, and they were like, I don't know what to do when you sing this music because I don't know it. Like I don't know the songs you're singing.
So possible theme alert. I've spotted the germ of this episode's, at least a possible topic, which is when you said that Phoenix, you know, your partner was saying, I don't know what to do with these songs because I don't know the songs.
Well, they were saying, I don't know what to do when you're singing them.
Yeah, I don't know. Yes. And there's something about that just, it's like a bright, shiny, possibly thematic object. That, like, confusion between people and like, disconnect or at least confusion. I don't know what to do when you're singing because I don't know the songs. I don't know. It just feels like a thing.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're like, should I be looking at you? Should I not be looking at you?
Yeah.
Because I'm like singing to them.
So how did you deal with it? Did you already answer that question? Did you say, do a little dance?
Sing a little song.
Sing a little song.
Get down tonight.
Get down tonight.
No, I think I just continued to sing to them.
Oh, okay. Hoping that the answer would somehow, like zeros and ones, would just reveal itself. At the time that was needed. Jump and a thing will appear. Jump and a parachute will open.
Jump and the ground will disappear below your feet and you will plummet for an interminable amount of time.
Right. All of which are not really good pieces of advice for parachuting.
No,
you should have the parachute on you.
Yes, you should.
Which is
know
what your partner was hoping for.
Yes.
They wanted a parachute.
Yes.
And there was none.
No. Because
and all you did was sing.
There's no parachutes in baseball.
Welcome to the land of mixed metaphor.
Can we take your coat?
Okay. All right. I think we're on to something, although quite possibly not.
Who's to say, really?
Really? I don't know.
We'll fix it in post. If it turns out we have no content, then we'll just make something up.
Oh, my dear, there's always content. This is what I'm finding.
Yes.
Like, there's... Oh, that was a thing.
You know that part in one of my other favorite, all-time favorite movies, Sneakers, where at one point Robert Redford's character has been kidnapped and thrown in the trunk, and he eventually gets back to his posse, his cadre.
Right.
And
the blind guy.
Yeah, Whistler is like, he's like, what did you hear? And he's like, you know, at some point, you know, the car was like clunking, like there were like seams in the pavement. And he's like, how fast was it? And he gets this thing to recreate the sound of it, and he tells him to slow it down. And then he's like, you know, I know which bridge that, like, you went over a bridge, and, like, these two were fogged in last night, and, like, you know.
Right.
Just one of the absolute best parts of that movie, and it's one of my favorite movies of all time. It fucks severely.
I explain that phrase. It what?
It fucks severely.
Which is a good thing in this
context.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So if this is actually the segment I wanted to work into this.
Whoa.
It's just the slang the youth are using. So fucks severely means like it's really fucking good. Like.
Okay.
You know, I think I said that to a friend about a song that I sent him, which the song in question, by the way, was Murder at the Bingo Hall. It's extremely good. It fucks severely. And sent it to him, and he immediately was like, yes, this, yes, everything about this, yes.
Okay.
That's it.
All right, so that's it. But, you know, okay, like, everything connects up with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll that'll be there. So that's in the mix. We've got It Fucks Severely and Forgotten the Other. Oh, I don't know what to do when you're singing because I don't know the songs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I am definitely familiar with the dynamic of I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
Oh, sure. Like,
that is a bit
at least 75% of being in public is that.
It's a number of years now to when I was kind of a brand new, like a lawyer, not totally new to the practice of law, but kind of completely new, a newbie to courtroom work. And I was in immigration court.
Mm.
And I've shared this with your mom, who's also a lawyer, a retired lawyer.
A recovering
lawyer.
In her own words.
Right. And she could relate. And I think a lot of people, not your Uncle Sam, but many others, have had this experience. You're new in court. Mom had given me a very nice, which we still have, large leather sort of document holder, a briefcase, but, you know, soft leather.
And soft body.
Capacious. What's that?
Soft body.
Soft body, yes. Very, you know, tasteful, sumptuous. And two things happened when I was in an early, like, immigration, what they used to call deportation defense case. Now it's called removal. You know, defense. So I'm in there representing my client, and I stand up and I have to approach the judge to hand a document in. And perversely, the manila folder that I have in my hand, it develops a mind of its own, and all of the documents fall on the floor, which is not a good look. You know, it's just not. It's hard to seem like, you know, the movie efficient lawyer when you've just dumped all your documents in front of whoever happens to be in the court, you know, and of course...
Your client
is not good. The judge is enough. Your adversary, the opposing lawyer, opposing counsel, and, you know, some other people waiting for their cases to be heard. So you've got an audience for this. And then the other thing that happened was that briefcase, which had like a shoulder strap, had a way of like tripping me and also dumping documents. So it was like... All of a sudden, documents, they were, you know, it was like perversely, like, we're in court, and he doesn't know what he's doing. And so...
Yeah, like slapstick.
We can do whatever we want. Yeah,
except
right.
Except a person's life hangs in the balance.
Right. And then there's that other story I could tell related to this where I was in, an immigration deportation defense type hearing. And at one point, the judge, who had been, like, at a higher position, but was happy enough to get a lower position, but he was a stickler for procedure, which they often are not in immigration court. It's just more informal, usually. But he was a stickler, and at one point, he said to me, counselor, because I was, like, offering something into evidence, and he said, counselor, would you please lay a foundation for this document? And I'm thinking, foundation. I wish I had paid more attention when I was in evidence, but I think I know what that is because I've watched like TV shows about lawyers. So I say,
fantastic.
I turn to my client and I show her this document and I say out loud, I show you now this, you know, copy of photographs and ask if you have ever seen it before. And the judge, with not waiting that long, says to me, oh, let me do it. So, but of course, what makes it special in these situations, and the reason I delight in bringing it up, is this is where you're particularly expected to show competence. And
like Valley Pilot.
Yeah, sure.
Not to cross streams.
Yeah, well, we'll put in a link.
We'll drop a link in the show notes.
Yeah. Although, how do you do that with audio? But anyway.
Well, you have to, once you post it.
Yeah, that's it. It'll be doable. Very good. Yeah, like if you were a freshly minted Zoom doctor,
mm-hmm.
and you said to your, I almost said client, your patient, I think they're called patients. Like you learn that early in med school.
Yeah.
Not
they spray
clients.
You with a spray bottle every time you call them clients.
Yeah, what's in the spray bottle?
Water.
Okay.
Saline solution? I don't know.
Okay. Good. So, yeah. So, if you were to say to your surgery client, I mean patient, by the way, could you, what's a scalpel?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would, then they would worry. Just yes. as I think my clients did in those occasions. Like, oh dear.
I just got a tattoo, a couple of days ago of a drawing that mom did a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this tattoo artist was giving those exact vibes. He was, he looked very young, and his whole demeanor when I was consulting with him, because this was just a walk-in tattoo, not a guy I had looked up ahead of time. And I brought my design, and the tattoo is an owl with a human face sitting on a branch. And so in the drawing that mom had done, the branch was just like, you know, two lines that sort of are open on either end. And I wanted the branch to have some little leaves and things and to be sort of finished on one end. And so I asked him, can you do this for me? And he seemed pretty incapable of drawing like a branch, like drawing some little twigs and leaves for me, and was asking me like, oh, is this what you want? And I was like, no. I was like, you know, give me, like, he had it as a printout, and I was like, I'll just draw exactly what I want. And so I would ask him questions, like his professional opinion on certain things, and certain things he seemed kind of unsure. Other things he seemed kind of brusque, and I was just like, getting like very like apprentice vibes from him.
Right.
So it took so long to place this tattoo, to place the stencil. I had to keep taking it off and like putting it back on. And to take the stencil stuff off, you can use alcohol to get it off. But what he was doing was using hand sanitizer, and there was like a big bottle of hand sanitizer on the front desk of the tattoo shop, and he would just go and get like a little handful of hand sanitizer and like get it off. I was like, this is not professional. Like, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. We haven't done anything that's broken skin or anything, but
right.
I was just like,
seem like you were ready for this.
Yeah. And so we're like moving the thing around. He doesn't seem that like, there's like a slight like just issue communicating, not necessarily in terms of language, but just in terms of like just not able to understand what it is I'm asking of him. Finally, I placed it myself. I like taped it onto my ankle where I wanted it, and he put down the like tattoo transfer lotion stuff, flipped the tattoo down, and you know, we did it. But like that was such a harrowing experience that at a certain point I was like, I am about to walk out of here after making this guy struggle and flail for like an hour. You know,
right.
I don't feel confident in this guy whatsoever. Even as he was tattooing, I was like, I don't feel confident in this. And that's not a good feeling.
But you went through with it.
I did go through with it.
And it worked out.
It worked out, but right. I was left kind of shaken by that experience.
Yeah. Okay, well, so this reminds me of another similar thing of like being subjected to it, being in a situation where somebody didn't seem to know what they were doing. So years ago, I had this client, I did some consulting work, seasoned, you know, kind of veteran cameraman who's in the Film Cameraman's Union, Kevin Lombard. And he told me at a certain point, which was important for his work, he had some real shoulder problems.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to use his shoulder, you know, as a cameraman, at least at that point. So he went to, he had shoulder surgery. And the guy working on him was like an intern. He was like a new, mm-hmm. a newbie doctor. And there was like a veteran guy, you know, looking over his shoulder. And the newbie, and Kevin, probably a mistake, opted to have just local anesthetic. So he was awake for this.
Mm-hmm.
So he heard all of the exchange.
Noises.
Well, what, you know, I mean, so the young guy is like, am I supposed to do this with the anesthesia?
Oh, God.
Am I supposed to do that? And the doctor's like, no, don't do that. And
I would panic.
So he's like struggling to find like the right vein to put the needle in for the anesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, blood starts like spurting
mm-hmm.
in a way. It was like, didn't quite get the vein or something went off. And at a certain point, the young guy ends up saying, uh-oh. And Kevin, who's completely awake, says, what do you mean, uh-oh? Which is, like, not a conversation you want to be having when you have surgery.
Yes.
Yeah, so that. Yeah. That happened. Which, yeah, again, you know, in the training, you know, at what point in your internship do they say, all right, don't use the word uh-oh.
That should be day one.
Yeah. So yeah, things going wrong. All right. So the other thing was that fucks severely, which
yeah.
is really kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum. Maybe
yeah.
that's the relationship here. A thing can't fuck severely unless people. Well, I mean, it implies that people knew what they were doing and were good at it. But we're getting closer to the destination. The zeros are piling up, but there's a one out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's less far away than it used to be. And I think at this point, we have to start looking for the deeper, the more profound significance of the delightful theme. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. So, okay, I'm just no pressure, but if it's out there in the next X number of miles,
well,
let's get it.
Something that I said to Mom earlier, we were driving back to your guys' house,
right.
My childhood home.
Yeah.
So, we were driving home, and the sun was setting because it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Which is depressing, but the clouds were looking very painterly and beautiful, and I was struck by this, and I was telling her, you know, marvel at the beauty of nature, but also, like, it's more like the beauty of physics, because it's just the light refracting in our atmosphere, causing this beautiful pink light, and interacting with the water droplets of the clouds to make them look like that, all that good stuff. But then I was sort of quietly observing the clouds and resisting the impulse to take a picture because I knew the picture would not satisfy my need to capture the moment. And
mm-hmm.
so I simply had to observe quietly. And I said to her that was the feeling that compels artists to create. And she said, elaborate on that. And I said, you know, that life overwhelms us, sometimes with beauty or pain. And we find within ourselves a need to express those feelings. And you know, if you're of an artistic or creative inclination, then it's through that. And if you're not, then it's through other things like conversation or through seeking out those experiences through travel or whatever. or singing in the shower, you know. Everyone has to express those feelings and get them outside of themselves somehow.
So if you can close the loop here, I know you have another half of a thing.
Sandwich.
A thought unit.
Thought sandwich.
At least. Link. How are you thinking, if at all, that relates to I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing? Is that like the clouds?
That,
it's
well,
like part of the beauty of human existence is this clueless, completely fucked up, clueless condition?
Yeah, I think that it's the other part of the zero effect quote where it's like, if you're looking for anything at all, then your chances of finding it are very high, because out of all of the things in the world, you're bound to find something.
So now, are you saying, don't be distressed, human?
Yes.
If you're feeling like you don't know what you're supposed to be doing?
If you feel like all you've got on your side are zeros, and you still haven't found your one, then it's okay, because those zeros also matter and are also real.
Every zero is a one.
Yeah.
In the right context.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a complete mindfuck. I have rarely, and certainly not for many years, been stoned. But I feel like I am in this moment, just from what you said, saving whatever it would have cost me to get
weed in this economy.
You have saved me weed with what you said. Every zero is a one. Don't stress. Chill out, dude. Don't let it bother you and, you know, freak out because you don't know what you're supposed to be doing. Because just do something, and it'll be the right thing. It's like, whoa.
When you start from your starting point, you know that that's not your destination.
Right.
And
but at least you're somewhere.
Yeah, so if you go away from it, then you're somewhere.
Yeah, bless it. And it's all about the journey, man.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter whether you're going in the right place, because you're going to be on a journey no matter what, as long as you go, girl.
Do you think that our listeners are going to be perplexed when the first three episodes are average 11 to 18 minutes each, and then our fourth one is an hour and a half of uncut audio?
So again, the reason I thought of zero effect, not to be confused with Zeno's paradox,
also fucks severely.
Yeah,
I mean, if we're talking about ones and zeros, zero effects.
Right.
There we go.
There you go. Coincidence?
I think not.
Okay. I feel like Guy Fleegman in Galaxy Quest. Are you stoned?
Is there air? We don't know.
We don't know. That's another great movie and role. I feel like
you can still watch it.
I put it into the category that from my extensive work in film production, feature film production. Why am I laughing?
Because you're known for
known for Amityville 3D.
Yeah,
I can't say that enough. People should know this. I can't believe I have to tell you. But
do you know who I am?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. All right. Fine.
The windshield wipers are bad audio.
Yeah, they are bad audio. Bad juju. Go.
You can take the New Yorker out of New York, but you can't take the road rage out of the New Yorker.
I just said go. That was, what could be more benign? Go, sweetheart. Darling. You think that's road rage? You're setting the bar pretty low.
Yeah, I'm a really nice driver.
I didn't take out my priestly crossbow.
We're back. Okay.
All right. This is it. Time to do the sign off.
Okay.
Hate it.
I love you. Get home safe.
Thank you.
That's my sign off.
Can you do a Night Vale version?
And as we look into the sky, we wonder.
What the fuck are we supposed to be doing?
Were all those zeros really ones?
You nailed it. Nailed it.
Okay.
All right, that's it.
Did it fuck severely?
It absolutely did.